Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Curta Krishnire, and we're going to have really exciting discussions the next 2 weeks with Josh Liller, who is the preeminent historian, if you will, about the areas around the Loxahatchee River and Jupiter. And actually, Josh, welcome to the show, and give us a little background on yourself and what you work on.
I work for the Loxahatchee River Historical Society, which operates Jupiter Inlet Lighthouse and Museum. I have co-authored an updated version of 5,000 Years on the Loxahatchee, which is a coffee table book with extra content that is covering Jupiter history in general. The whole area that I co-authored with Jim Snyder, who has done a number of books, and he was the author of the first edition. Our Historical Society did the updated version with us and got that in print and keeping it in print available through Amazon and then through our gift shop at the Lighthouse. I also edited, heavily contributed to the Florida Lighthouse Trail second edition, which is a guide to all the lighthouses past and present in Florida and a lot of their history and how you can go see what's there today. And jupiterlighthouse.org is the website that will tell you more about the lighthouse and visiting the lighthouse and events and connect you all of our social media to learn about events that are going on. I do usually anywhere from 6 to 10 talks, especially in season, January through April, in the local area, talking about a variety of aspects of local history from the lighthouse and the military and all the civilian history here.
So, Josh, last week we actually talked about on our podcast the lighthouse at Fort Jefferson in Dry Tortugas, which was commissioned by the U.S. military. The Jupiter Lighthouse, similar history, just after some of those lighthouses in the Keys were commissioned. And the military man responsible for the Jupiter Lighthouse is none other than General George Meade, the famous George Meade. Wasn't quite a general at that time, but there's no other place to start with the Jupiter Lighthouse than General Meade.
Yeah, that's correct. Back in the 1850s, Jupiter was built at a good time for the lighthouse service. They had just really overhauled and reorganized the lighthouse service to make it more efficient and improve the lighthouses around the country because they really hadn't been living up to what was needed from them up till that point. And one of the decisions they made was to get professional engineers. And back at that time, your best place to get a trained engineer was actually West Point. So each portion of the coast was broken up into a lighthouse district that had a Navy officer who did inspections and an Army officer who served as an engineer who would locate the lighthouses and design them and handle any improvements in new buildings and things like that. And so Meade, put in charge initially of some projects down in the Florida Keys, is then assigned to pick a good spot for a lighthouse somewhere near Jupiter Inlet. He looks at the Jupiter Island first and decides between how narrow and low-lying most of it is and also that it's part of a Spanish land grant with a complicated legal situation, that there's federally owned land right here on the mainland, just a quarter mile back from the ocean, and there's even a nice sand hill here that'll make the lighthouse a little taller without as many bricks. Perfect place for a lighthouse. It is not built, a common misconception that it is for the inlet. They like to locate lighthouses at inlets for sort of double duty and for better access to them. But really, our lighthouse is a seacoast lighthouse. It is about the shipping that is passing along the coast. We're at the north end of the Florida Straits, so you've got all the ship traffic between the Atlantic coast and the Gulf that's passing through the Florida Straits and right by us, and they need to not run into the eastern end of Florida. A lot of times they're hugging the coast coming down not to fight the Gulf Stream. Meade picks out our design, our location for the lighthouse, creates the original design. Things are ready to roll, and then the Third Seminole War breaks out, and that puts a hold on the whole project because they don't know what the Seminoles might get up to. They might attack the lighthouse site, and they don't want to dispatch a bunch of troops to guard the place. So they'll just postpone it for a few years. Meade gets sent off to a surveying job, not related to lighthouses, up in the Great Lakes. He'll be a captain when the Civil War starts, and then go on to fame, leading Pennsylvania Volunteers in a brigade and then getting promoted abruptly before the Battle of Gettysburg and winning that against Robert E. Lee. There's actually a Lee connection, very small one, not as much as one as people sometimes would think, to the lighthouse. Lee, at the end of the Mexican War, is put in on a group of surveyors for the Army who are going to survey the entire Florida coast looking for places for military reservations for fortifications. So they look at a number of inlets and islands along the way, and there was some suspicion that he may have actually, especially since there'd been a Seminole War fort here, that he might have stopped in at Jupiter and maybe even picked out the site that was later recommended to Meade. Finally, we're able to track down the report that he filed at the end of this journey in the National Archives, and he said that from Miami to New Smyrna Beach, they just skipped all the inlets because they were too shallow for their schooner. So Meade and Lee have both did work near here on the Florida coast, and both of them found the Jupiter Inlet very frustrating.
What a historical paradox. The two generals that would face off at Gettysburg, perhaps the most famous battle Americans have ever fought in, certainly the most famous battle in the American Civil War. Back to the lighthouse, your organization maintains the Jupiter Inlet Light, one of the most important things you guys do.
Yeah, we're in an unusual situation in that most nonprofits involved in preserving a lighthouse, that was why they were founded. The lighthouse was coming available, it was falling into disrepair, people get together and let's save the lighthouse. When we were founded over 50 years ago, there was certainly an interest in preserving the lighthouse someday, but at that time, the Coast Guard was still actively using the site, still had people assigned to the lighthouse. We're founded, the first meeting takes place in the end of 1970, and a local woman who was named Ethel Gravitt, she's very involved in civic organizations, takes her Boy Scout troop to see a woman named Bessie Du Bois at her home museum. Bessie had grown up in the area. She had married John Du Bois, who had been born in Jupiter. They ran a fish camp at what's now Du Bois Park. Bessie had become very interested in the area's history and preserving it and writing about it and collecting it. And just sort of a one-woman show there, doing a great job, especially with the resources available to her in the 50s and the 60s. And she would do a lot of talks in the area to civic groups and Boy Scout troops and things like that. And so Ethel brings her Boy Scout troops in. Bessie talks about the history, afterwards, she and Ethel are chatting, and Ethel says, this is an amazing collection of stuff you've got here, a lot of knowledge, but what's going to happen to this if something happens to you? And Bessie's response was that, I got three kids, but they're all doing their own thing. They're not really interested in the local history. I don't know who will care about it. And Ethel said, well, somebody should. And so she sets about, with the aid of the local women's club that she's involved in, getting a meeting together, and they talk about why it's important to preserve the history, and people at the meeting were all on board with this. And a couple months later, they get back together, they elect a board, bylaws. A year later, in 1972, we incorporate as a nonprofit, which is the date we usually use as our anniversary in January of 1972. And initially, it's just about preserving the local history, the Jupiter to Cuesta area. At the suggestion of one of the pioneers that was involved, they decided to name it the Loxahatchee Historical Society. We had river in later, so to not confuse us with the Loxahatchee down there by West Palm Beach. Of the local area, the whole Jupiter to Cuesta Loxahatchee River region, the lighthouse just being the best known part of that. And they do a lot of local exhibits, collecting history, having guest speakers and things like that. And finally, we get a museum in the 1980s. What's now Burt Knowles Park. That's our first purpose-built museum. But back in our early days, just right after we formed, the commander at the Coast Guard station had really interested in history, and he hears the Historical Society is formed, and he said, hey, we've got the oil house, a historic building right next to the lighthouse. We're on electricity now. We don't need to store oil in there. Would you like to use it for a museum? We've been occasionally letting people in on Sundays to climb the lighthouse. They can see your museum and then climb the lighthouse when we've got someone to volunteer here from the Coast Guard. So we're all on board on that. Get that opened up in 1973. It's our very first museum, our first kind of foothold on the lighthouse preservation. And it's a slow relationship there, just being open on Sunday afternoons because people are living on the site for the Coast Guard. They don't want to be disturbed in their homes. But finally, with the downsizing of the Coast Guard station and a changeover who's living there, and the lighthouse being really fully automated, so the Coast Guard's not caring for it as much as they used to, the Historical Society approaches the lighthouse, the Coast Guard, about a lease on the lighthouse, which we get a lease signed in 1994, and they are able to strike a deal about we can bring guided tours in, make sure nobody wanders in anybody's front door, that we can bring them in, tell them about the history, take them up to the top of the lighthouse, and in exchange, we're responsible for taking care of the lighthouse, restoring it, maintaining it, kind of take that burden off the Coast Guard for the most part. They'll inspect us periodically to make sure we're doing our job. And we'd get a grant to do a huge top-to-bottom restoration in 99-2000. Eventually, the Coast Guard personnel will move off of the site, which event will allow us to no longer have to be 100% guided tours, that we're able to offer optional guided tours, but mostly people can tour their own way if they just want to climb the lighthouse, if they're in a hurry. But a lot of them will take the time to see the other exhibits and take tours and things on the site. In 2006, our museum will move from Burt Reynolds Park over to a historic Navy building on the waterfront in Lighthouse Park. And the old museum building is now the Loxahatchee River Center. They're a separate organization doing kind of marine biology education. So we are running the Jupiter Inlet Lighthouse and Museum. A further wrinkle in the unusual situation, in 2008, we were able to successfully get Congress to pass legislation preserving the entire 120-acre lighthouse reservation. It's Jupiter Inlet Lighthouse Outstanding Natural Area. Because it had been set aside from the Lighthouse Service originally from federally owned lands, it would revert to the Bureau of Land Management, and there was uncertainty about what would have happened to some or all the property. So by getting that congressional designation, it preserves it. So you've got the large portion of it as a natural area, which is great to have up here. We were lucky here with Jupiter being developed a little later than a lot of Palm Beach County. We have a lot more natural areas and parks and things up here than a lot of the other parts of the county do. So people can walk the nature trails, they can kayak along the shoreline or swim. And then the historic corridor area, they can visit not just the lighthouse. We have the Keeper's Workshop, which is historic light station building with an exhibit about the lighthouse, how it was built, how it works, the keepers. We have our 1892 Pioneer Home from the Tyndall family that we've moved to the site and restored. It's the oldest surviving house in Jupiter. Got a lot of native vegetation that's been landscaped on the site. We do tours about the military history and the lighthouse history and the Native Americans and the native plants. Normally, we have a whole museum on the site about local history, keeping that Loxahatchee River Historical Society aspect going, talking about the early Native Americans and European contact and shipwrecks and the Seminoles, our life-saving station that used to be on the beach and helping people with the inlet, pioneers and agriculture and World War II in the area and all that sort of stuff. They are currently replacing the US 1 Highway 1 bridge right next to our museum. Like, it is the building and the air conditioning units and then the bridge abutment. The entire bridge has been taken down. They're removing the last of the kind of the rubble and the pilings now. They've secured the building. They've put in things to help support it against vibrations. People keep asking, what are you renovating on the building? It's like, no, the chimneys are boxed up so that they don't possibly snap if the building shakes from pile driving nearby. The building is protected, and they're monitoring it for any vibrations to make sure that none of the pile driving will damage it. They've been receptive on concerns for that building and for the lighthouse. The lens is temporarily wrapped up to protect it in the lighthouse, but it'll shine again from the main light, as soon as all the pile driving and demolition is over, so there's no longer a vibration risk. The building itself, it's not in the way. They're keeping the new bridge within the footprint of the old bridge. It's just noisy and shaky and dusty and, not a pleasant time to be in there. So we packed up all the artifacts for safety. We've moved into some temporary portables in front of the old Coast Guard PX to keep the site open. People can still climb. They can see all the exhibits except the main museum. And then once that bridge project gets far enough along, then we'll be able to put the museum back in service, and we'll continue to have exhibits in there about the local military, the local history in general. The real long-term goal for the site, and we hope it's not too long-term into the future, is that we want to build a purpose-built museum on the site that will give us more space for permanent exhibits, temporary exhibits, our offices, archives, so people can come in and do research and things are well preserved and stored in there. And then the our museum building that on the waterfront there, since it's a historic Navy building, we want to turn that into entirely the military history, and specifically focused on the local local area's military history. Having five branches of the military right on the site at different times, having a big World War II training camp nearby in what's now Jonathan Dickinson State Park, and of course, local veteran stories as well.
On that note, let's talk a little bit about the World War II history of the Jupiter Lighthouse and obviously the Coast Guard operations out of the area. And in fact, World War II history is really a hidden gem up and down the Treasure Coast from Fort Pierce or north of Fort Pierce to the Jupiter area.
Yeah, the Coast Guard and the Navy as well. So the Lighthouse service had been civilian. They had run the lighthouse and civilian keepers. And then right before World War II, the whole lighthouse service nationwide is merged into the Coast Guard and becomes a military service. So they are operating the lighthouse during World War II as a military station. With the outbreak of war, they also start, in addition to the keepers, to do just the normal operations and maintenance, they assign additional Coast Guard personnel to use the lighthouse as a lookout point. And this was commonly done on most coastal lighthouses in World War II. It's, you know, a great lookout station. It's the best you're going to find, especially back before skyscrapers and condos down here. There is a beach patrol nearby for the area. They're patrolling the beaches on foot and horseback and keeping out an idea for shipwreck survivors or saboteurs that could potentially land from a U-boat. Then right on the property, the Navy had leased part of the property for a radio station going back to the early days of radio in the early 1900s. And originally it had been a communication station. But right before World War II, they changed it over to a radio direction finding station for military intelligence. So the Navy is picking up signals from out in the Atlantic Ocean, high frequency signals that are hard to intercept otherwise. Some of these are coming from German submarines, U-boats. The U-boats would surface every night to report home to Germany what's their status. And we can intercept where those messages are coming from. We can intercept the messages themselves. They're encoded with the famous Enigma machine, but you record that encoded information and it's passed on to naval intelligence and they can potentially decode it. it's our station and other stations to get multiple bearings on where these signals come from and then potentially locate the U-boats to reroute convoys or to send patrols from ships or planes to attack them. The Marines are guarding the Navy station in World War II as well. It's a, you know, naval intelligence station, so they need to make sure it stays secure and safe. Right off our coast, people are often surprised to learn, you know, the U-boat war came very close to the shores of the United States, especially in early 1942. 3.5 miles off the coast, we had a tanker torpedoed in February of 1942.
Yeah, it's an area really rich in World War II history. There was even training for amphibious landings, which was useful. Operation Torch in North Africa, and obviously Operation Overlord, the Normandy invasion. Operation Dragoon also, which was the Allied invasion or landings in southern France. A lot of that training took place on the beaches in Florida, including the Fort Pierce area, and then all of the history you just mentioned in the Jupiter area around World War II. Anyway, back to the lighthouse itself and the grounds. You guys have done a remarkable job of preserving land and creating a natural area around the lighthouse, as well as some wonderful historic exhibits at the lighthouse, including a pioneer home, Cheeky Hut, Native American Cheeky Hut, etc.
Yeah, we have, in addition to the lighthouse, the Native Americans had been on the site for thousands of years prior to the lighthouse. The lighthouse hill is not a Native American built hill. That's just a natural sand hill. But along the shoreline, stretching almost a quarter mile, is a shell mound or midden built by the Native Americans over many centuries. And that was one of the occupation places that they lived along the river and the inlet. There's a couple of mounds across the river as well. Du Bois Mound and Sunny Sands Mound is two other prominent examples as well. But they're living here, fishing, eating, leaving things behind. And that shell, the pottery, the projectile points, tools, and everything that they've left behind, by having the site protected, we can have professional archaeologists do digs there to learn more about the people and what they were like. And then when you go, and you can see some of the midden, and we'll point it out on the Native Americans tour we'll be starting soon. We've got a Seminole Chiki on the site that built for us by actual Seminoles. So it's designed, you know, the official way and quite durable as a result. We will, during event, when we have events like our Family Adventure Day in January every year, we'll have some kind of Seminole crafts or things there with some people from the tribe or the Ata Tiki Museum there under the Chiki to really make it appropriate. And that's where we stop in the tours to talk about the Seminoles and the natives. And so the right across from that, separated kind of by the hammock we've planted with natural plants, we've got pineapples growing in the yard, which was a big agricultural thing down here back in the 1890s in Jupiter in particular, but in a lot of the Florida East Coast, it isn't really done too much anymore. And people come there, especially the kids, and they you know, they've seen a pineapple in a grocery store. They don't realize they grow out of the ground rather than on trees. And then the Tyndall House itself, they were one of the Tyndalls were one of the homesteaders on the Loxahatchee River. And so it's a very typical house of the era. It's up off the ground. It's big ceilings, big windows. We furnished it to turn of the century to make it, you know, feel like it was lived in. It's pine heartwood. So it's really durable house. Then we've restored the kitchen that had been at one point broken off to previous owners, had used it as a chicken coop. So we had to replicate the kitchen, but you know, people would come in there, that's a huge kitchen. And oh, it's a family of 10 and they didn't have air conditioning. So, you know, it's July, you're trying to cook on your wood stove and you got to have room for everybody. You need a pretty big kitchen and dining room there. And then out in the workshop building, which was originally a pump house and a paint storage locker and a workshop office space, we have a laser exhibit, for example, that will tell you can play with that and see how a Fresnel lens bends the light. Because that we were lucky, we're one of 13 lighthouses in the whole United States that still has a first order Fresnel lens, the biggest kind in their lighthouse. And when there's not a bridge project going on, still active. While those were not just used at various sizes, every lighthouse around the world in the 19th century and into part of the 20th, the principles behind it are still used in all sorts of modern aids to navigation and stage lights and headlights and probably some of the lights in your house, using the principles behind Fresnel. And so understanding how someone revolutionized how we understand light and light optics, and then seeing how that's been built on, you kind of get a better sense of, you know, why the world it is the way it is. And, you know, maybe some of these kids will be inspired that someday that they can revolutionize some part of our the science, that they'll come up with some big new discovery that is technology we're using for another 150, 200 years.
Josh, thank you so much. That was amazing. We will have you back next week to talk a little bit about the battles of the Loxahatchee River in the Second Seminole War, sometimes incorrectly called the Battles of Jupiter Inlet, a little further down the Loxahatchee River. So looking forward to that. That'll be next week. So we'll have you back, and thank you for joining us this week.
Happy to be here.